It's time for Youth Sports Now, the only radio show in Rochester dedicated to the excitement, the passion, the development, and well-being of young athletes. From peewee to college athletics, Youth Sports Now brings you expert advice and helps prep young athletes for the game and beyond. Youth Sports Now is sponsored by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance. And presented by McQuaid Jesuit, the area's only all-boys Catholic college prep school for grades 6 through 12. And by TJT Sports Photography, taking the winning shot every time. Here's the host of Youth Sports Now, the lifelong Little Leaguer, Greg Camp.
And welcome to this edition of Youth Sports Now, a very hearty, healthy, happy welcome to Youth Sports Now. My name is Greg Camp. I am your host and the lifelong Little Leaguer. Thanks, Bob Savage, for that wonderful introduction. Hey, you know, lots of really cool things going on in the world of sports and the world of youth sports, and it's just a great time of year. I mean, there's spring training starts in a couple days. Actually, spring training started for a couple of teams this week, which, you know, that's just a rebirth. You know that spring is coming when you see the baseball teams getting to the Florida or the Arizona sun, and that's just a wonderful opportunity to realize that you can sit back and relax and know that baseball and spring is on its way. You wouldn't know that from the weather, but hey, at least you know it from the sports schedule. The Olympics, you know, the Olympics are going on strong in Sochi. I keep on mispronouncing it when I talk to friends and relatives, but it is Sochi, and you know, all I can say is that the games have been interesting, to say the least. There have been some interesting injuries which have taken place, which we'll talk to Peak Performance's Mike Naparella about some of these things that are going on. And then, of course, there's the whole issue of Bob Costas' eyes. He has his own Twitter account. Bob Costas' pink eye has its own Twitter account. And, of course, you've got Matt Lauer's ugly winter hat. So, you know, what more can you ask for in the Winter Olympics? It's not like the good old days when it was, you know, a few miles down the road in Lake Placid and it was really more traditional. It's really turned into quite the media event. And of course, the weather there. I mean, the weather in Sochi has actually been warmer than it is in 12 of the cities where the Winter Olympics have been held in the previous years. So it's been 50, 55 degrees in Sochi. So it's been an interesting time, which is, of course, affecting some of the skiing and some of the snowboarding and other events that take place. So, again, that's an interesting time of year. So we've got lots of things going on. And then, of course, here in Rochester, you've got your Rochester Amerecs still playing strong, good American Hockey League hockey, and all the peewee leagues and everything that's been going on. Don't forget, we've got all the tryouts that are taking place or will be taking place in the next few weeks with the high school sports, especially the modified spring sports season is out there. And, you know, I mentioned a couple of times my feelings about tryouts and how they should work. And also, you can read that in my sports column in the Messenger Post newspapers about how I feel about tryouts and some of the tips that 24 years of coaching have provided me to help your kids get through some of the anxiety of tryouts. And believe me, there's a lot of anxiety. I think it's the American Pediatric Association and also the National Youth Sports Federation did a study a few years ago, and it was remarkable. I mean, the number of kids on a nationwide level that go through anxiety because they have youth sports tryouts at the modified or the high school level. These are kids who, you know, they might be the best athletes in the world, or they might be your average athlete, but they're getting nervous about the tryouts, and what if they don't make the team, and what if they don't impress the coaches? So I've got a whole bunch of good information for you that's out there on maybe some tips to help your kids get through some things. And speaking of getting through some things, I never do this, but I'm gonna break the my stereotypical trying to keep it all professional. Give my dad a special shout out today. He had some eye surgery, and it's good that we're on the radio because he probably wouldn't be able to see if we were on television. So and besides, he always thought I have a great face for radio. So shout out to my dad. Hope he's doing well after his surgery today. We've got, as I said, a really special show. You know, every once in a while on Youth Sports Now, we like to just sit back, relax, and Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training where we like to just sit back and chat. And there's so many things that are going on with again, the Olympics and with sports injuries, tryouts, you name it, and the transition now from winter to spring sports, that we thought it'd be a good idea that today's one of those days where Mike and I sit back and chat for the next little bit, and we can talk about some of these issues that are facing your kids, or if you're a coach or a sports administrator, the kids that that you coach or work with in the sports administration side of things. So Mike and I will be chatting when we come back, and of course we'll talk about all sorts of things, and we can take your questions, email them into us, or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll be glad to answer them. And when we come back, Mike and I are going to start talking about some injuries and some of the things we can do that can take better care of our kids.
It's Youth Sports Now on WISL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM. Webified today gets the podcast and the live stream at WISL1040.com.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
I am Little League.
I am Little League!
We are Little League.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
Sportsmanship, teamwork, character. Little League, big dreams.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
Everybody get up.
And we are back on U Sports Now. Greg Camp with you. And also with us is Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. Mike always is here in the third segment of the hour. But as I said in the intro, we thought we would, Mike and I would sit down and chat with so many things going on with the Winter Olympics and some things going on at the NCAA level in college basketball. And of course, you've got the transitions now from kids going from the winter sports into the spring sports, whether it be tryouts or whether it be even practices. So it's a really a good time to talk about the well-being of your children and the well-being of the kids that you coach and administer on the sports administration level. So Mike and I are going to just go back and forth. If you want to hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, please do so and let us know what we can do. And we'll be glad to answer your questions live tonight. And even if you have a phone call, give us a call at 346-3000 or toll-free at 866-552-1009. That's 866-552-1009. And Mike and I will be more than happy to help you out. So first of all, Mike, welcome to the second segment instead of the usual third.
Thanks, Greg. It's actually good timing that the show is tonight and not 2 days earlier, because I just am coming out of a little laryngitis, so I apologize if I'm raspy.
Well, being the sadist that I am, I'll make sure that I ask you extra questions tonight so that you have to talk even further.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
No problem. Hey, you know, let's talk a little bit about the Olympics. You know, there's been lots of positive things, lots of negative things, lots of things that, quite honestly, you just don't know what's true or not coming out of Russia and coming out of the Olympics. But let's talk a little bit, I guess maybe the category is weather, but how the weather is affecting things. You know, they have been having 50, 55, 60 degrees in the Winter Olympics. And actually, in the intro, I misspoke. What I meant to say is that the temperature in Sochi has actually been warmer this week than 12 cities where the Summer Olympics have been.
Wow.
So it's causing some problems, and it seems to be causing, obviously, the most problems with the outdoor events, but the downhill skiing, the snowboarding. I don't know if you remember a few weeks ago, we did sort of an unscientific poll where we talked to kids and asked them what sport they really wanted to see in the Olympics, and it was snowboarding. And, of course, Shaun White and doing this whole thing, which he finished fourth and did not medal in the previous sport section that he had won in previous Olympics. So what they're saying with the weather is that it's the downhill and the snowboarding, that the warmer temperatures is creating ridges, and the ridges are coming up with the injuries. So injuries are taking place, again, somewhat blamed on the weather or the conditions. And it seems to be some ACLs, some knees, some ankles. But one of the ones that I think you can help our listeners understand better is there have been a number of shoulder separations. And in the skiing area, I know some of the Swiss skiers and the Austrian and the German skiers have been doing their practice runs, and they've fallen because of the weather of these ridges, and they're separating their shoulders. So I guess my question to you, first of all, is you know, what is a shoulder separation? And I guess when you fall, there's probably no way of preventing it. Am I right?
Well, yeah, it's very difficult. It depends on how you fall. It's an interesting term, the word shoulder separation, because, you know, as a layperson, I think the first thing we'd think of is the shoulder got pulled apart. It got separated. And that's really more in the shoulder joint proper, which we would talk about as the humerus or the arm bone as it connects into the shoulder socket, is more a separation of that would be what we call a subluxation or a dislocation, where the head of the arm bone in the shoulder joint slides partway or in a dislocation's case fully out of the socket.
And is that because of an impact?
It could be because of an impact. It could be because you got wrenched back in a weird position, but very often due to an impact. You could be holding on to something and fall, but very often it's falling on your arm in a certain way. A shoulder separation actually refers to the joint just above that. If you look at where your collarbone, or the scientific name is the clavicle,
mm-hmm.
if you look at where your collarbone and follow your fingers up along to where it connects to your shoulder blade, on the top of your shoulder, off to the side, there's a little bump there. It's a tiny bump for most of us. And that's where the shoulder blade and the collarbone attach, and there's ligaments, a number of different ligaments that hold that joint together. It's a very important connection because it's one of the prime connections then of the shoulder blade to your body. If it wasn't connected by those ligaments at that joint, the shoulder blade would be floating around on your back,
mm-hmm.
only held by muscles. So that's a really important joint, but it's not really the shoulder we think of. It's really part of the shoulder blade joint. And a shoulder separation really refers to a sprain, which is a ligament injury, which means the ligaments got stretched out. And a separation would mean varying degrees. It could be a minor grade 1. It could be a moderate grade 2. It could be a severe or complete grade 3 tearing or disruption or stretching of those ligaments. So when someone has a shoulder separation, it very frequently is a fall onto the outstretched arm or maybe a fall onto their elbow.
Mm-hmm.
In the position that drives the arm bone and shoulder blade up against or into across that joint, stretching the ligament. Now, a classic finding on that would be when that athlete then stands up and is standing in the mirror, for example, or someone standing across from them, that bump that is almost imperceptible when you're looking at them actually becomes very elevated.
Okay.
Because now the ligament that held the blade and the collarbone together has been stretched out. So now the blade can sort of sit down low and the clavicle or the collarbone can ride up a bit and you see a big bump there.
So is it more than of ligaments and muscle, I guess, versus bone?
Well, it's actually absolutely right. It's ligaments are what are being damaged. And there's a few ligaments there that can be damaged. It depends on the degree of the separation. But it's not really a separation where it fully disconnects unless okay. It's a grade 3. And the orthopedic surgeon that sees that athlete would be able to grade that once they look at the film and they do their assessment to say, do we call this a grade 1? There's very little separation. A grade 2, there's a moderate, observable, appreciable amount of separation. Or a grade 3, those ligaments have been completely disrupted.
Okay.
And it used to be a joint that didn't used to get fixed. And now there are techniques that surgeons have developed to actually try to repair those ligaments because it's a difficult joint to fix. But it is being done more and more now. And as the years come down the road, I would suspect that more and more we'll see not just maybe shoulder specialists, but across the board, more and more orthopedic surgeons being skilled and equipped and trained at fixing that joint in some cases.
So what happens, Mike? Obviously, I'm going to make an assumption, and the assumption is that, you know, this is the Olympics. So these athletes, and again, most of them are pretty young. You know, I know there's some old guys like me who are actually competing in the Olympics, but these are pretty young athletes, and they do some sort of damage with the shoulder separation issue. So is it repaired then surgically, arthroscopically, and then what happens afterwards? Obviously, I'm going to assume they got to go to some sort of physical therapy, and then do they regain full mobility and strength? Is it a personal thing, and could these, I'll call them kids, but could these young athletes still compete?
Well, certainly from starting from the back end of your question, I think absolutely we expect those people to go back and compete. The great majority aren't going to require surgery. And very often, surgery is not even offered. Very frequently, grade 3 AC joint, acromioclavicular, or what we called in the layman's terms, shoulder separations, will be treated non-operatively to begin with. They'll come in for physical therapy, we'll work at decreasing their pain, work on restoring their motion. As they restore motion, then begin strengthening, and then try and work at strengthening and helping increase stabilization around that joint to restore function. Now, very many athletes will recover all of their function back. But others may have some limitations. It depends on how bad the injury is and how well their body responds to the non-operative rehab. For those who are failing conservative care, again, as the techniques are being improved, more and more some may be offered surgical options. And then they'd go through physical therapy again. But those surgical options certainly would be offered more so to get someone back to athletic level function. Mm-hmm. The great majority of people who have even a grade 3 separation will ultimately, once it's settled down, the inflammation's down, they've restored motion, and they've worked on their therapy to get their strength back, most of those people will be able to live a normal life. If an athlete, let's say a young athlete, a college-level athlete, someone competing in the Olympics, their day job was really to move on to a labor-type situation where they've got a lot of heavy lifting and overhead tasks, well, that's a different story. They may struggle. But for day-to-day life, very many of them will do fine. In fact, many will go back to athletics fine.
Okay.
Certainly people who are landing and impacting on their shoulder regularly, let's say it's a soccer goalie or someone in a sport where they're going to take a lot of spills, snowboarders, for example.
Sure.
As they do all their tricks and they're in the half pipe and they're in the slope style and they're taking falls as they try these tricks, the more often you're going to land on that shoulder, it's not going to keep tolerating that.
Right.
My son Jordan, for example, when he played college football, had like a grade 2 AC joint separation. As a wide receiver, you're in the air, you're getting hit, and you're landing. After 2 or 3 weeks of rehab with it, between some stuff we did and then at school with his trainers, he was able to go back and he essentially functions normally now. He can do all the overhead lifting and all the sort of things that he wants to do without any really persisting limitations at this point.
Can you, you know, you deal with this more on a day-to-day basis because you're seeing patients and you're certainly seeing, you know, young athletes. And as a coach, I can only imagine this. And it's happened in my career maybe three times when I've had to deal with certain players. But I guess this is more of an opinion question. Can you imagine what it must be like to train for 3.5, 4 years, you make the Olympic team for your country, and you go out there and in a practice run, not even competition, in a practice run, you fall, you're injured, you do something to the ankle, the knee, you separate your shoulder, and suddenly your Olympics are over. And I can't even fathom what that must be like. That's got to be like, you know, the dream job. If somebody called me up and said, you're going to manage the Boston Red Sox next year. And then, you know, I get to Boston and somebody says, oh, you know, that now that's not going to happen.
They pick somebody different.
I could. How can these athletes deal with that?
Well, it's a great question. I think at that level, those athletes get increasingly equipped with how to handle and cope with stress. You know, from all sorts of things, dealing with the coaches and dealing with the competition they've had to deal with, functioning at international levels, functioning with all kinds of eyes on them all the time. During competitions, there's thousands of people, or you're on the world stage, not just your local high school gym or college gym. So I think they've learned increasingly often how to deal with that stress because it took a unique level of skill sets and emotional and behavioral and mental capacities to get to the level of even making an Olympic team. And I guess I don't know what the data says, but I would suspect that the great majority of those athletes at some point in their athletic progression have had to endure an injury or a setback and figured not necessarily how to get back the quickest, Greg, but how to get back right. Mm-hmm. Because the only way to compete at a high level on the world stage is to do it right. The competition's too big. It's too steep.
Sure.
It's too strong for them to go back sort of faking it and lying about it and pretending and function at world-class level. So, you know, again, we try to encourage our young athletes these things all the time, is think about the people that you're trying to emulate.
Mm-hmm.
They, pardon the expression, but they live and die off of the success
right,
of their body.
Exactly.
And if you don't do it right, not only next week's success, but potentially next month and next year's successes could be compromised. So there's a balance between being tough and being strong and understanding sometimes you got to push through sorenesses. But do you ignore an injury and just go at it regardless? You can't, because you're not going to be able to succeed at that level. So I think when you take those skills that they've sort of developed over time by necessity and then put them in the situation of it's the Olympics, you just had an injury in the practice run and now you've got to cope with that. I think they're uniquely equipped compared to maybe you or I to deal with those things. But it's not unlike our young high school or college athlete who maybe was never injured before and has these visions and dreams no different than the Olympic athlete.
Sure.
As to where they're going to be an hour from now.
Right.
Or what they'll be celebrating next week or how much playing time they're about to get and what the season's going to look like. And then the crushing blow that it is emotionally to have an injury completely unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
But think about what I just said. Completely unexpected.
Right.
No one can plan or schedule their injury.
Right.
No one can plan or schedule all sorts of unusual circumstances.
Yeah, life circumstances.
You didn't think, I thought I'd make the team. Oh my goodness, competition was stiffer. I didn't make the team. I thought I was going to be a starter. Wow, someone came back and played this year that we didn't think was going to play. I thought I was going to start. Now I'm competing for a backup role. All sorts of unexpected things happen, and injuries was one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So those athletes, I think, are uniquely equipped, but it's almost, it's fascinating to see how they cope with that. Because if you look at, I was watching the snowboarding the other day, and it was interesting to see that last run of athletes on their last opportunity to make the final three to get a medal. And people who, let's say on the slope style snowboarding, the women I was watching, had an awesome run, and then on one jump had a bad landing where their butt ended up hitting the ground.
Right.
They knew the style points were going to be compromised.
Points taken away.
And that wasn't going to be enough to get them to the final. And yet, I thought it was fascinating. These athletes get to the bottom of the hill, kind of shrugged their hands up like, boy, darn.
Right.
That was a bummer, wasn't it? with a smile on their face. Yep. And there's some level of, I think at that level, unless they're really, really, really older, you know what? I'm going to be back next time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great perspective. That's a great observation you made, because it's I apologize to this athlete immensely, because I should absolutely know her name, and I cannot recall it. But the one thing that amazed me before the opening ceremonies, as we know, you know, usually what happens is there's a day of competition before the opening ceremonies, there's practice runs. And there was actually an American athlete, a young girl, and she was injured in the – that was actually an ACL. She injured herself on the Thursday before the opening ceremonies. And when they brought her into the hospital, as the story goes, at least as it's been reported on the various sports networks, is that she was put on the operating table, but she was put on an exam table, and the doctors were looking at her knee. And – instead of saying, how bad is it, will I be able to compete, any of that, her first question was, does this mean I'm still an Olympian? And it was because of the opening ceremonies. And the doctors, of course, said absolutely. And she was the one who, she came out with the U.S. Team in a wheelchair. And then she got up on crutches and she made a little bit of the walk by herself. And I so apologize for not knowing her name. But I mean, that moment just hit me as like, you know what? I don't think I could do that.
Well, and you look at what it took for them to get there. What an incredible accomplishment it was even to get there. So, yeah, you didn't medal. You didn't even get to compete. And boy, how devastating that truly is. Even if they show great coping skills, it's still going to hurt. It's still a hit they've got to take and figure out how to
absolutely.
Deal with. But you still it's like the teams, Greg, we watched the Super Bowl recently in the playoffs. How teams, you know, Denver looked back and Coach Fox said, let's not let this detract from the incredible season we had.
Right.
There's only two teams left playing, by the way.
Right.
And only one team got to win. We had an awesome season. And I think these athletes, you know, the girl in the wheelchair that you're referring to, had to at some point be looking back thinking, am I still an Olympian? Boy, look what it took to get here.
Mm-hmm.
I was only one of how many athletes in the entire United States who was so successful, worked so hard for so long to compete at a high level, to be chosen for this team. Of course you're still an Olympian. Yeah, I know you're going to put your nose to the grindstone, get through that rehab, and try and make it next time. And even to world championships prior to that.
Sure.
But took a lot of hard work, and that still is a pat on the back and deserves congrats.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I have to admit that, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge watcher of the Olympics, both summer or winter. I tend to watch the winter games a little bit more, only because, you know, you're trapped inside in Rochester weather and it's not the summer and where you can be outside. But, you know, I still have to admit that I get a little tingle up my spine when I see these athletes compete under such sometimes adversity, whether the adversity be mental, physical, you know, weather conditions or just straight competition. But to see these athletes and know, again, I mean, I have my personal views on whether NHL players and Major League Baseball players should be allowed in the Olympics. But, you know, the bulk of them are amateurs. And to watch what happens is just truly amazing to me. That I'm just grateful that the Olympics still exist, and I hope they continue to exist for the amateur sports athletes.
Absolutely. And you think about what we're talking about here, you know, the old adage of it's really 80% mental or whatever the percent is. I'm not sure it's been able to be truly been studied that we have data on it. But certainly that idea that there's a ton of non-physical qualities to high-level competition that differentiates the very mm-hmm. best from the best, from the better to the average. And a lot of it has to do with your mental game.
Sure, sure. No, I think it's just unbelievable how these Olympics just continue to go on. And hey, Mike, you know, when we come back, I think it's a perfect segue, because one of the things we've been talking about is the difference between training and the actual, you know, physical therapy type of things that you can do. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit about that. And I know you've been up to Lake Placid and done some work up there, and we'll chat a little bit more about that.
Excellent.
You're listening to Youth Sports Now on WISL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM. Get the web stream or the podcast at WISL1040.com.
Local sports leader.
You're listening to WYSL1040.com on the web.
FM 92.1
and 1040 WYSL Avon Rochester.
Intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
I am Little League.
We are Little League.
I am Little League.
Sportsmanship, teamwork, character. Little League, big dreams.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from home, where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural, where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete, where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family, where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you win. You'll feel the difference.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
And we are back on Youth Sports Now. I'm Greg Camp, your host, and Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Train is with us. And, you know, for our new listeners out there, I wish I could say that right after the show you could come on down to the radio station and we're going to have free birthday cake for everybody, but that would be untrue. You can come down to the station, but we won't have any cake. But Mike and I will be blowing out some candles, I guess, for our year anniversary or birthday of Youth Sports Now on WYSL. And we're just we're thrilled that we've been able to bring you all this information for the past year, which brings up a great time to maybe do some stuff in review and make sure that for our new listeners, we're getting the message across about well-being for your athletes. And we're also getting a little bit of review for you in terms of some of the things that we have talked about in the past year. So, Mike, you know, we've been talking about the Olympics and some of the things that have been taking place over there. And it occurs to me that, you know, people say that when it's the Olympics or when it's pro sports, that they have the finest and the best medical care available to them. And if I may be so bold as to do a little bit of relentless promotion here, I think people in Rochester are lucky because they have you. They have you and your team at Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. And what I wanted to ask you was, you know, what makes you different? I mean, there's traditional therapy and then things that you have talked about in the past and you have taught me tremendous amounts of things about functional therapy and even functional things and how I deal with my team. So maybe as a review for our regular listeners, but something new for our new listeners, let's talk a little bit about traditional therapy versus functional therapy. What does that mean and how is it different?
Sure. And I think that it's an awesome question. And like you said, I think probably important that we just review that because I know that we've got new listeners and people who may not have heard that in the past. Sort of traditional physical therapy approaches oftentimes from years past, can start to become a bit, if you want to call it microscopic, is that we oftentimes, let's say someone's got a knee injury. We're going to sort of get the microscope out and look at their knee, and we're sort of limited and focused on that knee. And so not that we wouldn't look at other body parts, but the extent that people are equipped from their training to be able to look above and below and understand how things interrelate, I think can be a bit limited. And so oftentimes, hey, I've got a knee injury, so we're going to do a bunch of knee exercises. Mm-hmm. Then we'll start doing some leg raises, and we'll put you on the machine, and you'll do your quad extensions. Then you'll lay on your belly and do the hamstring curls. And it's almost like this recipe cookbook sort of list of things that you would do to a knee. And then maybe we'll put you on a leg press, and maybe you'll stand on a box and do a step up. And it can become a bit generic, and oftentimes we can get overly focused, I believe. And this is one reason why we want to educate listeners to be wary of this, whether it's coming from a physician or whether it's coming from a therapist or an athletic trainer or whoever,
right,
that we really want to make sure that the people who are helping you with your injuries are really looking at the problem-solving side. And I think that's one of the differences about our group. Mike and I both have our fellowship trained in what's called applied functional science, and both Karen and Aaron have certifications in applied functional science. And that's just there's a group out in Michigan that is the Gray Institute that's really working hard, and I think the leaders in the world right now, at training people on the biomechanical problem-solving, troubleshooting that's required in realms of healthcare rehabilitation and also in performance and personal training.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been trained at that place very uniquely, and I think it positions us different than most in physical therapy realm to be able to look at someone's body and try and put the pieces of the puzzle together, to dissect and break it down, not by a microscope at the injured knee, but almost, Greg, if we think of that metaphor like a telescope, we're going to actually have this small viewer that has a big expansive view, so we can look at the forest and the trees in the forest.
Right.
We're not going to look at the tree of your knee. We're going to look at the tree of your knee and look at how the ankle foot are functioning, how the big toe is functioning.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand how that hip is functioning. And we really, really need to appreciate that things that are wrong with the other leg totally can impact that knee. And if we don't understand how that all ties together, we can really miss the boat. So it goes far, far, far beyond understanding tissue healing of your knee. It goes far beyond knowing what the knee muscles are and how to exercise those, but really putting the big picture together. I'll give you an example. Someone might come in, oftentimes we see people as a second consult after sort of quote-unquote traditional therapy didn't work. And then an orthopedic doctor may send them to us and say, you know, they sort of failed their first bout of therapy, but we believe you might be able to take this a little further. Would you take mm-hmm. a look at them? And we'll oftentimes have them show us what sort of things they're doing. And they may say, I was doing a step-up exercise, for example.
Okay.
Which can be a functional exercise. It's like climbing stairs to strengthen your thigh and various things. But they may tell us, hey, you know what? My knee hurt when I was doing that. And maybe they were on a 6-inch box and they were trying to do these step-ups and their knee still hurts. And so that now their knee is still hurting and they've been deemed a failure if they didn't respond to therapy. Functional biomechanics tell us that we need to really understand why that knee is hurting. And let's say we look at that knee and say, you know what? You've got an underperforming hip. Well, there's certain reaches we could do that will turn on that hip. So if everyone were to stand on their right leg right now and do a single leg squat, by understanding biomechanics, I can add your hip to the squat by taking your left hand, reaching it across your body, almost like you're reaching, we would say, to 130
right,
at a 45-degree angle. And if you keep that hand reached across, oftentimes that very same patient that just left 8 weeks of physical therapy and quote-unquote failed and is still struggling, they needed their hip to play a bigger role.
Okay.
And laying on your side with an ankle weight or sitting in a machine at the health club, pushing your legs in and out, thinking I worked my abductors, adductors, sort of biomechanically is missing the boat because those muscles never do that when you're standing.
Right.
So when we put them in standing and we recruit them the proper way, we can turn that muscle on, and all of a sudden that patient does the same step up and they say, they have this look of shock on their face, and they say, my knee doesn't hurt right now. What did you just do?
Mm-hmm.
And all we do is recruit their butt muscles to be a friend to the knee.
Gotcha.
Someone else may be cheating too much at their hip, and they're doing the step up, but we look at it biomechanically and say, my goodness, you're so hip dominant. You're not even proving that your knee is good. And they may have come back and said, well, I finished therapy. They discharged me. I tested and did very well on all my squat tests, but I'm still having trouble when I jump or cut or I can't play my sport. And the doctor sends them in for a consult. We take a look at them and say, my goodness, you weren't really passing those tests. Your hip was cheating for you.
Right.
It was doing too much. You don't have a knee that's very strong. So we can take the hip out. For example, in this case, we might take the right hand for that right squat, reach it across the other way, take those butt muscles, those helpers, those friends out of the mix, or tip their hand down sideways to the right, because that uniquely, biomechanically, optimizes or stimulates muscles or takes them away.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can add muscles in, we can take them out. It's not just a step up as a step up or a squat as a squat.
Right.
And now that patient suddenly says, oh my goodness, I'm feeling my quads burn when I do the step up drill now. I never felt that before. It was always my hamstrings and my butt or my calf. I never felt my thigh before. Well, that's because they were living off the cheaters. But if you don't have the ability to biomechanically analyze that, you can totally miss the boat. And then that patient is left after much time and money is spent, really not having had the success they wanted. So we just have a real passion for problem solving, biomechanically understanding. And listen, we're not always correct, but we're trying our best to problem solve and kind of dissect the picture of the body, figure out where those shortcomings are. And then with this training we've had, be able to uniquely, kind of creatively customize, very importantly, where the start point should be. And also, Greg, start people where they're successful. Not start them just on an exercise because it's the thing to do, but start them where they're successful and then carefully bring their body on a safe path with challenge toward what they couldn't do before.
So simply put then, I mean, for the coaches and for the parents who are out there, you know, simply put, what you're doing is the old saying of, and I always mess this up, but, you know, the hip bone's connected to the
Absolutely.
Knee bone and all that. So,
I love that cartoon.
So that's one part of it, is that everything is connected. And secondly, this functionality / biomechanics, I mean, you're looking at what the problem is, but you're looking at an overall solution. So, you know, it's like when you those artistic things that you look at and they say find the image or the word in this big print. You know, you are actually looking at the big print as well as looking for that specific word. So really, when it comes down to it, for parents and for coaches and stuff, when it comes down to injuries, the idea here is really to see how the body works and what has, you call it cheating, I may call it wrongly so, but I may call it failure, but to see what works and what's failing.
Absolutely. And I think that there's default points and patterns and tendencies that we see the human body sort of tend to fall toward. But we also know that we've got to actually test the person. We can't assume. Because there's times, Greg, that I look at someone's knee and think, oh, but it's going to be because of their foot. And then I look at them and think, oh, my goodness, the foot tested out actually pretty well. I'm not so sure anymore that it was the foot. And based on their story and my first impressions on initial screening, I sort of was already, you know, in my head seeing those patterns. But as the testing went on, if I'm careful, I realize, you know what, you're not like those last nine people. Actually, you have a foot that's looking really good. Wow, it's actually your opposite hip that's underperforming. And now we look at and try to understand, well, boy, Greg, based on the activities that you do, how is it that left hip would really be mucking up your right knee?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, now when I think about how it is that you reach for the ball or move side to side or you have to jump that way or land a certain way, oh, now I see why that left hip would make sense that it was the cause of your knee. So we've really got to be able to look at and analyze. Yes, there are patterns, but we can't assume that the defaults are always occurring, even though there are some commonalities. But understanding biomechanics means you kind of know where your tendencies are, but you've got to always test, always observe. And that's why we just have such a passion. It excites us to be able to problem solve and figure these things out, and especially to catch the odd ones.
And doesn't that big butt that you just mentioned, doesn't that also mean, though, the importance of not every knee is the same, not every injury is the same, just like you and I may have many of the same likes and passions about sports and then youth sports programs, but we are each our own personality. Therefore, I'm going to make the assumption that each of us, we are our own body. Therefore, a solution may be different for me than for you when we both have the same exact injury.
Greg, this is such a hot button for me and for our clinic. In this world of medicine that we're in now, it's an increasing hot button term of evidence-based medicine. And one of the challenges with this whole concept of evidence-based medicine is that we're grouping a bunch of people in a study, let's say, by a diagnostic name. Let's say it's ACLs. And what we really know if you talk to the ACL researchers is that there is no one single cause of blowing your ACL. There's numerous causes. For one person, it might be a poor reactive neuromuscular ability. For someone else, it may be a muscle imbalance. For someone else, they're too knee dominant. For someone else, they've got some weird things going on with their feet. For someone else, it may be alignment of their body. Yet we take all these people with an injury and we put them all together because they have the same name. And even though on the side, we do all acknowledge that we're unique, when the study gets done, we just lump all ACLs together. And then whatever the study happens to say becomes the quote-unquote evidence of how you treat an ACL. And I think we all, and I really would implore the public to be really careful when these discussions go on, when you read things on the internet, when your doctor, your therapist, your personal trainer, whoever says the evidence is to step back and be cautious about that. And as professionals, I would urge the physicians out there listening and other therapists out there listening and other professionals who deal with injuries like this to step back and just be very, very careful that when we read those pieces of literature and we start making decisions off of them, to not rob ourselves of remembering it's an individual in front of you. Everyone needs to be assessed for their own merits, because the truth is, when it comes down to the end of the day, the studies very frequently also will acknowledge, maybe it's a separate study, but that acknowledges there's a multiple list of factors that went into how that injury occurred or why someone was susceptible. So you can't acknowledge that. And then at the very same time, pull a bunch of people together with the same name of an injury and then say, here's what the study shows you should do. And then insurance companies, this is going to happen, folks out there, increasingly. Insurance companies are going to start saying, well, the evidence says this is what you must do to treat an ACL because the study showed it. Well, but the study only showed the commonalities that ran across the board. If you rob physical therapists or athletic trainers and rehab people from the ability to assess each single person, let's say little Tommy blows his ACL out because he's got a bad foot, but there's not enough Tommies in this study to reveal it as truth.
Right.
We can test him and see that it's a factor, but it's never quote unquote proven or evidence because they pulled 1,000 or 500 ACLs together.
So what they're doing is they're basically saying that instead of being a person or an athlete with a specific injury, you're evidence in something versus, you know, the person that you are. And I think maybe the coaches would understand this the best, that not every center fielder can play second base and not every first baseman can pitch. So, you know, just like in all sports, there are custom positions and custom things that take place in how you play the position. And this is the same type of thing. If you're injured, well, you know what? The injury, while it may be lumped together as a certain type of injury, you are also a different person from the guy next to you with the same injury.
Absolutely. We want parents and coaches and kids out there to understand that you should feel that you're being treated like an individual, and someone caringly is being very introspective in terms of their thought processing of trying to discover and figure out what's wrong versus you feeling like a number. Some things are very simple injuries and they don't require complex algorithms and rocket science to figure out. But many things deserved deeper, more thoughtful assessment and problem solving and program design to help prevent the future. Listen, you can rest long enough to have your symptoms go away.
Right.
But if we didn't really find the underlying cause, you're going to come back and get hurt again. And we talked about that as an example a few weeks ago. You know, Mike had a patient come in who had gotten injured, saw their pediatrician, was put on rest for 4 weeks, felt better after the ankle sprain. Didn't do anything to actually change their performance ability, their risk factors, but merely let the symptoms settle. the appearances on the surface were, hey, I'm fine. Can you hop? Oh, I can hop. It feels fine. Can you run? Could you jump? Sure. Okay, go back to cheerleading. They went back, and within the first day or first week, they sprained their ankle again.
Right.
Because they needed to be assessed individually and not assumed in general sense that things were a certain way. And you hit the nail, Greg, totally on the head, that athletes and coaches and parents, but also physical therapists and trainers and doctors need to remember that everyone's an individual. There is some common knowledge we have. No doubt we want to use the evidence to our benefit, but let's not handcuff ourselves and strap ourselves and limit ourselves from really wanting to know and be curious about why that person had the injury. Why was it your right knee and not your left knee?
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me overuse if it's not both sides.
Right, right.
How could you have an Achilles on the right and not have an Achilles on the left when you run cross country?
Sure.
Right. How could you have a right shoulder tendonitis but not a left shoulder tendonitis when you're a swimmer? It's not simply overuse.
Well, it just goes to show you that there is no simplicity in this, and the body is a mechanical, wonderful thing. Hey, you know, we've got about a minute left, so I want to ask you two things real quick. First of all, athletes, parents, coaches, youth administrators want to get a hold of you at Peak Performance, and they want their team to meet your team. How do they do it?
Absolutely. The first step is check us out on our website, www.peakptrochester.com. We've got a lot of information about our practice. There's some pictures and examples and bios about our therapists there so they can learn a little bit more about us. Our phone number is 218-0240, and we're located over in East Rochester. And it's conveniently 1 mile off the East Rochester exit at 490, so it's a pretty quick shot from 15 to 20 minutes from almost anywhere in the Rochester area.
Perfect. And I've been there, and it's a wonderful place. And I encourage you, if your kids are hurt and if you're hurt, you know, come on over to Peak Performance. Okay, Mike, we've got this minute left, and I'm going to throw you a curveball, and I want you to put on your thinking cap, and I'll give you a second to think about it. When you look back on this whole year of youth sports now that we've been doing here on WYSL, who's been your favorite guest? And real quick, because we're running out of time, but real quick, why were they your favorite guest? Silence.
That's a tough one because, you know, I just want to take a moment. I'm going to throw this back at you, Greg, because you weren't expecting this. But I just want to thank you for the awesome job that you've done getting such great guests for the show. I hope people out there realize you've got national level people out there. One of my favorites, and I have a ton of favorites. I'm just going to tell you one of them because it's one of the first shows, Bilbo. Awesome coach, heart for kids, gets the big picture. I thought he was a great start off to our whole season.
Yeah, he was good. He was good. And he'll come back on again. He's always chomping. Bill's not somebody we can put silence on very well. So, hey, great show today, Mike. I think it's been great. Remember, folks, you can listen to the podcast at WYSL 1040am.com or 1040.com. And, you know, we've got a whole year's worth up there, so go for it and listen to everything you need to know about youth sports now.
Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training is Rochester's trusted go-to source for sports performance training, injury prevention, and rehabilitation. Peak Performance, where you will find world-class experts just around the corner from your home. Where feeling better, finding confidence, and gaining superior performance are natural. Where traditional one-size-fits-all protocols are defeated by personalized performance plans that are as unique as each athlete. Where you are treated like a professional and are cared for like family. Where evaluation, recovery from injury, return to play, and competitive advantage are in the bag. So whether your athlete is a peewee player, an elite competitor, a seasoned professional, a wannabe weekend warrior, a couch contender, or a still active retiree, Peak Performance is your ticket to exceptional achievement. Make your move. We'll bring out the athlete in you. If Peak Performance is what you want, just ask for us by name. Peak Performance, where you will feel the difference. Call Peak Performance at 218-0240. That's Peak Performance. Performance 218-0240. We'll be expecting you.
Youth sports provide memories for a lifetime, so why not preserve them? TJT Sports Photography offers individual, team, and action photography of your all-stars. Whether you're a parent, league administrator, or school athletic director, visit TJTSportsPhotography.com to see the major league offerings. From peewee through high school, TJT Sports Photography gets the winning shot every time.
intellectually competent, loving, religious, open to growth, committed to justice. The words used to describe the young men who graduate from McQuaid Jesuit. Educating young men in grades 6 through 12, McQuaid focuses on the entire person, mind, body, and soul. There is a difference at McQuaid Jesuit. Why not find out for yourself? Go to McQuaid.org today to schedule your visit. That's McQuaid.org. McQuaid Jesuit. Live the experience.
Youth Sports Now on WYSL 92.1 FM and 1040 AM.
By now, everybody has heard the story about the college basketball player from Oklahoma State, Marcus Smart, who went into the crowd during a game against Texas Tech last weekend. Allegedly, a fan and a Texas Tech Booster Club supporter made a comment, again, allegedly, about race to the young player who is African-American. Marcus Smart then shoved the fan, pushing him back and onto others in the stands. Make absolutely no mistake about it. What the young Mr. Smart did was wrong. No player, college or professional, should ever go into the stands to talk, touch, strike, or shove a fan, regardless of what they may have said. Oklahoma basketball coach Travis Ford correctly and appropriately suspended Smart for his actions, made him apologize to the fan, his team, his college, and their fans. Okay, situation over, and while regrettable, you now know my stance on his actions. But as one of my favorite broadcasters, Paul Harvey, who has long since passed away, used to proclaim just before the commercial break, up next, the rest of the story. Two wrongs don't make a right. This fan reportedly has a problem with this kind of action and has voluntarily given up his season tickets. But his behavior is a true study in what fans think are their rights, rights to abuse players for the price of a ticket. Grant Hill, an NBA great, made some interesting observations about this incident that I could not agree more with. Hill said that college and professional players are under the microscope so much more than ever before. In the good old days, a fan could yell and scream, and then they went home. The player could leave the court or the field and forget about it. Not anymore. Social media, especially Twitter and Facebook, have really turned a fan's abuse of players into a 24/7 event that extends to family, friends, teammates, and even the college. After a perceived bad game, fans go home and just light up the social media world with abuse, accusations, and frankly, many untruth and myths about the player and or their performance. Now, in my book, the professional athlete who gets paid to perform, excel in their sport, and paid for endorsements may not deserve it, but hey, they are at least getting paid and quite handsomely for their efforts. They may not deserve the abuse and certainly never anything racially themed. But the pros, or as a former co-worker of mine in broadcasting used to say, pros means paid right on the spot, know it's part of the game. The college players? No way, no how. I have attacked the NCAA and universities for the lack of equality in scholarships for sports versus academics. But wait a minute. Until the NCAA starts paying these kids, which I hope, by the way, is never, they are still considered student athletes. It's probably my blurred vision that I see these guys and I look at them and say, hey, they're going to college for an education first and a pro career second. I know that's not necessarily true, but a guy can dream. For a college kid to take the abuse from a supposedly older, wiser adult is wrong no matter how you look at it. Adults know better, and how I see it, college players are still what I consider youth athletes. You would never tolerate an adult yelling and screaming like that at a high school game, would you? Oops, I forgot. That happens too. And that's the view from my dugout.
This has been Youth Sports Now, Rochester's only radio show dedicated to the youth athlete, has been brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester, helping your young athlete achieve their peak physical performance, and by McQuaid Jesuit High School, and by TJT Sports Photography. Visit us on Facebook, Twitter, or our website at www.youthsportsnowradio.com.